We're recording in person. Yeah, Matt, in person, side by side, which is a not that we have cooties or anything, and that's not how we did it. But yeah. You know, the world changed over the last 3 years, and you know, COVID caused some of that to be I don't know, if taboo is the word, or controversial if you hung out with someone.
Yeah, yeah, because you might, you know, get, you know, cooties and shit. And, yeah.
So we had been using a digital format over the last few years to record, and we still will use it some, but a lot of those things were made free to podcasters over the last few years, and now they're not free.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
You know, they're so, like, hey, it's free. And then they start, you know, okay, well, you know, now you got to pay, and you get so addicted to it.
Right.
You know, you may just, and, but you know what? They're not fooling us.
And we're cheap motherfuckers.
Yeah. They underestimate how frugal we are.
We also don't live very far from each other. So recording in person is a pretty reasonable thing to do. And I actually, you know, prefer it. You know, I mean, I like seeing, I mean, I don't want that to sound weird. I don't like really seeing you, but I like seeing you.
Yeah, you know, it's good to socialize.
You're my homie.
Yeah,
you know? And so it's good to hang out and do. And, you know, and from the beginning, I mean, I've said this before, I do the Rub Royal podcast not because I'm expecting to make any money off of it or to have 1,000 downloads, but I get to hang out with my best friends and record a show. And that's what I've always enjoyed about this, and talk movies and pop culture and things like that. And,
yeah.
And we'll continue to do so as long as we feel that we have something to say. You know, we're going to hit 350 episodes here in about 2 months. And so, you know, trekking towards 400. And we ran out of original trilogy Star Wars movies. Yeah. So I don't know what we'll do for episode 400 when we get there. I'm sure we'll think of something pretty fucking epic or something.
Hell yeah.
You know, but
like Howard the Duck.
Probably not Howard the Duck, Frank. Oh, yeah. Okay, that would be his movie. Duck sex in it. The movie's weird.
Yeah, it is
weird.
Well,
it implied duck sex.
Leah Thomas. Yeah, and the duck sex.
And did you... I think I read today that it was... today was the day Batman first appeared in Detective Comics, but I always thought it was in March. I thought I read that today.
Huh.
But it might have been like this last week in March.
Maybe so.
You know,
maybe
so. So I guess happy birthday to the Batman. Batman?
The Batman,
you say? I'm counting on it. When is Batman's birthday?
West.
April 7th. I don't know why someone put it up today. So his birthday is
coming. No, they're always jumping the gun, yeah. You know?
So it would be next week's episode. But anyway. But, yeah, man, it's kind of cool. Like, hanging out in the same room and doing a show and, you know... And there's no weirdness. Like, remember when Frank was our co-host and he would make it awkward in the room?
Yeah, he would. He'd say something weird and he'd have that weird cackle laugh.
Yeah, and sometimes I would feel things on my legs. And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, stop doing that.
Yeah. Don't touch me, Frank.
Frank.
He's like, come on, man. We're bros.
That's our boy.
Yeah.
And
We love him.
But,
he's great.
Yeah, I forgot to message him if he saw the movie we're fixing to talk about. Not our featured film today, but the movie we both saw in theaters this past week. And,
yes.
I wonder if the Frankster, the Biscuit, went to see it. But, man, last Saturday, so I took my oldest with me. You know, he's 14 now, so he's gotten to watch, you know, a few rated R films. He's seen the Mad Max films.
Yeah.
And Terminator 2 and... a couple others I can't recall at the
RoboCop
time.
RoboCop, probably.
No, I haven't shown him RoboCop yet.
Oh, wow.
Did he watch Prey with me? He may have. But a few things. He had seen over the course of the holidays, you know, I let him watch all three John Wicks. So he was super excited to go see his first adult movie in theaters, you know. And I was about the same age. It was about 1990 when I saw Die Hard 2. In theaters. Not the first one. The first one was one of the first rated R movies I saw at home, but the second one was the first one I saw in theaters. So I was about the same age, so I felt it was time for him to see his first movie. And you know, and he enjoyed it. And I immensely enjoyed John Wick Chapter 4. You know, people listen to the show or know me know I'm a huge fan of John Woo films, and growing up in high school discovering Asian action films like The Killer and Hardboiled and A Better Tomorrow and some of his films, and was very influenced by those. And I know for you, you know, watching Arnold Schwarzenegger films, and Stallone was a big influence on you. And I appreciate those too, but when I discovered John Woo, it took those things to a different level.
Yeah, it's a different type of action.
Yeah, and Chad Skulinski is a who directed the John Wick films is heavily influenced by Woo and Hong Kong action film. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You can tell.
Oh, and, yeah, big time.
And Hardboiled is my favorite action film of all time, and I don't think anything will ever replace it. But man, Wick 4 came close. This is a
pretty fucking epic
action film for the ages. It's almost 3 hours, but man, it didn't feel 3 hours at all.
No, it moved.
It moved so quickly. I was like, oh, that's it. It's over. It's brilliantly shot. It's got a great story. It feels epic. It does have a definitive ending if they don't do any more. But there is some things at the end of the film that you could take with a grain of salt, I guess, dialogue wise, that like, okay, there could be a part five.
Yeah.
But we'll get to more of that in a minute. But this movie starts and it kicks you in the nuts and it doesn't stop.
yeah.
Basically. Some just fantastic set pieces, cinematography, action, well acted. Man, sometimes you get these action movies over the years and they're not always well acted. And you know, they go through the motion, so to speak. But the Wick films take the time to do proper takes on these things, too. I think they're well-acted films. And I think sometimes the Wick films don't get enough credit for that. You know, lots of new characters, lots of new good guys and bad guys on both sides. And I think it can't be said enough to have a fucking Donnie Yen in a goddamn John Wick movie.
And Scott Adkins, man.
And Scott Adkins and a Sonata is also fantastic. Just some great new... And fucking Clancy Brown.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, seeing him again, man. Just having him speak in a film is just really cool.
So this movie has all the pieces that you want for an epic action tale. And it delivers... Absolutely ever seen the movie.
There's not a wasted moment.
Yeah, I did miss about maybe 2 minutes because I'm old and I couldn't hold it. I had to go pee.
Three hours is a long time.
But I don't feel like I missed anything plot-wise when I got up because I picked the right time. I got up right after the attack in the Osaki hotel.
Okay.
So it slowed down for a moment. I felt like, okay, this is the time to go.
Yes.
And like I said, I didn't feel like I missed anything. Just how remarkable is... There's two scenes that really stood out for me in this. In Paris, in the circle of cars.
Yes.
That was amazingly cool. Shot.
The roundabout.
Now, granted, you do have to suspend your disbelief in some of this, but if you haven't suspended your disbelief in a John Wick saga yet, then what are you expecting?
I had a friend that posted online that he wasn't that big of a fan of this film because it wasn't very believable. It's a fucking movie, man.
What did you see in the last three movies?
Yeah, the last three movies, he gets hit by a car like five times. Yeah. He should be in a wheelchair right now, but he's not because he's the Baba Yaga. Yes,
exactly.
And he's just an unstoppable force. Logic is thrown out the window.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do when you watch really any type of action film.
Yeah. It's heroic bloodshed.
Yes.
Which is a genre created by John Woo, you know.
Yeah.
And that scene, and then the scene where they're in the renovated building, and Wick is going through the floors of the building and taking out the bad guys, and all of a sudden, this just amazing camera shot comes up above, like playing a 2D scrolling game, going room to room, watching Wick take out these bad guys.
Oh, just yes, that one.
Incredible camera shot. The way it's done, it was. It blew me away. I was like, wow, that is the coolest thing. Those are the two scenes that stood out for me in this film. The remarkable set pieces. I thought the club scene where he's fighting the really big, huge, weird guy with that strange accent and all
Scott,
that.
Scott Adkins.
That's Scott Adkins?
Yeah, dude. That?
Oh, I didn't even realize it was Scott Adkins playing that big dude.
Yeah, they put him in a fat suit.
Okay.
Yeah. And so if you're familiar with Scott Adkins, he was a ninja. He's been in a couple, martial arts films that you may not be super familiar with. He was in the first John Wick, but he played like a henchman that got taken out, and he really wanted to come back. They bring him back. He's a great martial artist. He was in one of the IP Man movies. I think it was like an IP Man 4 or 5.
Yeah, I love Donnie Yen. I've tried. I've had a hard time getting into those. I've tried to watch the first one a couple of times, and I just, I don't know.
I liked the first one. Well, what drew me into the first one was that epic fight scene where he takes on 10 men. And, you know, after they kill his, another kung fu peer of his, after he was just trying to grab a bag of rice that he had won fighting one-on-one, and then he said, you know what, I want to fight two guys at a time, and he loses. He tries to get the bag of rice he previously won, and one of the trigger-happy generals just decides to shoot him out of sport because, you know, the Chinese, you know, area has been invaded by Japan forces.
I'll have to give him a try one day. Maybe I just haven't been in the right mood, you know, for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, okay, so I knew Scott Adkins was in the film, and I didn't realize he was that big, weird, crazy dude.
Yeah, man, the fucking kingpin.
Card shark, yeah.
Yeah. Fucking nimble as shit, man, like Chris Farley, you know? whenever Chris Farley did the Chippendale stuff.
But John Wick, man, Donnie Yen's great in the movie. He's fantastic. He's a fantastic equal to John Wick playing Kane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much because I really want to try to stay spoiler-free with this review because I know people are still waiting. Some people didn't go this weekend, and Easter weekend's a big movie weekend, so the movie's going to probably do well for a couple weeks. So yeah, I know people will go see it, and some people still aren't going to theaters. I'll wait until it comes out, mm-hmm. you know, digitally. And but overall, this movie is absolutely one of the top action films I've ever seen. I'm going to have to watch it again, but I think it could be my number two or three action film of all time, right up there with Hardboiled and Mad Max Fury Road as two of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty epic. I know you mentioned the scene that looked like he was in a video game taking out guys. They fairly spoiler free. They use Dragon's Breath shotgun rounds,
right?
Which is I actually own a couple sets of those. Just because I was like, you know what, I'm gonna get some. Obviously, there's like nowhere to shoot those because you know they shoot, you know, flames.
Yeah, someone on a Facebook group page, wherever, said, "Oh, guns don't do that bullshit." And no, some guy was former military, came on there and put them in his place. Says, "Yes, they do exist. We used them in the army."
Yes. Oh yeah, and they shoot just like that, or probably more flame. It just depends on how they're loaded. How hot they're loaded, but it was super cool to see something like that, and use the way it was used. And then, of course, the stairs. The stair scene is awesome. So, you know, that's how I'll leave it.
Yeah. And then we also had, and we talked about the world building in John Wick. Even in this fourth one, when we're getting to a conclusion, introduce a new element with the tracker.
Yes.
This guy, he's aware of this world. He's not an assassin, but he knows about it. He has some continental money. He goes to a hotel, and they introduce this new element there, you know, with that. The fact that John finds a way to get back in to go after the high table, they introduce new elements there that we did not see. Some interesting religious symbolism behind this, which, again, it's crazy how much that you can tell Zelensky is influenced by Hong Kong action films. Lots of Hong Kong action films, the heroes use religious symbolism to justify what they're doing, you know, and John Wick is no different. You know, it does that too. And then the ending of the film is, you know, classic sewn into spaghetti westernism, you know, so to speak. And I don't want to spoil anything because I thought it was a brilliant ending. It's a definitive ending, but yet there are seeds that are sown that if they wanted to do another one. But I feel, after watching part four, that needs to be it. I think if you do a number five, it's going to cheapen what happened in this one.
Yeah.
The
studio wants another one because of the money.
But Keanu and Zelensky are both like, we're putting on hold for right now.
Yeah.
And I think if that's the right thing to do. I think if you're going to do another one, it has to be done really smartly and to make sense. That way you don't cheapen the sacrifices that were made to characters in this film to bring it to a conclusion.
Yeah, you would turn it into what Jack Slater movies were in Last Action Hero, like that type. You know, you killed my second cousin. Big mistake, you know.
Right. I think it's perfect the way it ended. And originally it was meant to be a trilogy. At least after part one was successful, they had an idea for two more movies. And then as they were writing two and three, they realized, like, you know, we might have to make this four. And so they kind of knew that it was going to be four films a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And people said, well, what about the fact that they were going to film four and five back to back? And I read an interview with Shalitsky saying, like, we weren't ever really serious about that. We just kind of talked about it. But the original idea was not so much. But he also said, well, the idea was that four would have been two movies. You know, they would have, because apparently there was a 4-hour cut.
Oh, yeah. 3-hour, 45 minutes. So yeah.
It still would have, I think, ended the same way. It would have just been longer and split into two films.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. We'll ever get to see that cut. You know, you hear about these things, and as we know, sometimes we get director's cuts, sometimes we don't. I don't know.
We'll get it in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, eventually. Everything. Well, I don't know. We're still waiting for that Batman Forever Schumacher cut. So
that's, you know, right.
You know, not everything comes out in a few years.
Yeah.
But maybe one day. But overall, man, John Wick, I think it's a movie if you're still timid about going to the movie theaters and stuff because of COVID or whatever, I think this is a movie that's deserves to be seen on the big screen.
Yes.
I feel like
there's some movies that you just have to see on the big screen. Like, mm-hmm. you said, you know, some of your top favorites, Hard Boiled. I would love to see that on a big screen.
Yeah.
Max Fury Road. That's something you had to have seen.
Alamo Draft House used to do screenings of Hard Boiled, but I haven't. One, we only have a couple Alamo Draft Houses still in Houston, and two, I haven't seen any listings for it. But yeah, I'd like. In fact, I was at Alamo Draft House one time on my birthday, and I think I was going to see. I think it was Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, or one of them,
mm-hmm.
and Hard Boiled was playing. I was like, man, I didn't know that was playing. I would have gone and seen that and waited on Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, and but you know, it happens. But yeah, this is definitely one of those. I actually was selling to my boss at work. I told him, I said, Mr. Dave, you got to go see this on the big screen. It's really good. I mean, because he's a movie guy, so we were talking about.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, he's a funny boss. He sometimes isn't aware. He's like, oh, there's another one out? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, I don't know. I don't pay attention to commercials and stuff. So he doesn't always know it's coming out, but then he hears about it. You know, he's not always in the know. So it was well worth the. Worth seeing, man. Definitely go see John Wick Chapter 4 if you get a chance. And I know we got to get to The Mandalorian in a minute, but I know you went and saw something today, too.
Yeah. I went ahead and saw Dungeons & Dragons. My uncle had bought the VHS, the movie that came out in the 90s with Marlon Wayans and Jeremy Irons.
Yeah, the really bad movie.
The really bad one. Jeremy Irons is good in it because he's Jeremy Irons. But it's a very weirdly acted and poorly shot action scenes, you know, bad CGI, of course. They relied on CGI so much for the army of dragons in the first one that it just made the movie look really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously didn't do very well.
And it actually had a couple of weirdly CGI-ish, like, direct-to-DVD sequels, too.
Yes.
People don't even know about.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were more popular in the UK, I think, than they were here.
Probably, yeah. And they came out until, like, 2005 or 2004. But, you know, this is a, you know, Chris Pine, Michelle Rodriguez movie. I went in with low expectations.
Let me stop you for a second.
Yeah.
I saw a preview the other day. I think it might have aired in front of John Wick. I can't remember. It was one of those that had pull quotes in it, right?
Yeah.
And it said, the most Chris Pine movie you've seen in a while from Chris Pine. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Now, they really wanted to do up the comedy in this movie. And there is a lot of comedy. I feel like I could have used a little less. It's not too much, but I would have liked a little less and a little bit more edginess for a Dungeons & Dragons film. But it works. It was better than I thought it was going to be. I'd probably give it a solid B.
I did hear that a lot of the not-so-good CGI from the early trailers was fixed, and it did look better.
It does look good. It's solid. It's got a good story. It's got a good villain. And it's got a decent little twist in there.
Or it's kind of a throwback to the 90s action films. And it's kind of just a fun movie.
Yeah. They really wanted to make it accessible to everyone, but they do mention some stuff in there that's, you know, kind of esoteric to the D&D fan base. They mention Baldur's Gate in there, and that's something that, you know, people may not know about. I played the Baldur's Gate game on computer whenever I was younger, way younger. You know, I knew all about 1d2 damage, 1d4 damage, stuff like that.
Fucking nerd.
Yeah, I know. I never played D&D though, which is funny. I played it on the NES, of course. But you know, that's about as close as I got to it. But took the kids to go see it. It's highly reviewed by critics. Critics are giving it a 91%.
They're enjoying it.
I don't think it's a 91. It's, you know, I side in between those critics and Roger Ebert. RogerEbert.com. They're giving it 2 out of 5 stars. I don't think it's that bad. No. I think it's more of a 4 out of 5 stars, maybe 3.5, 3 3/4, something like that. It's worth watching. I think you probably could wait for it to come out on maybe Paramount. I guess maybe Paramount's going to come out on it. Who knows? But it's solid. I think it's very fun, but it's going to get taken out by Mario for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes, I'm definitely seeing Mario next Saturday morning because we're actually doing our family Easter on Saturday. So
nice.
Go see Mario in the morning, then go to the fam for Easter. Cool, man. Yeah, I just thought the pull quote was funny. Then I like the other pull quote from it that said, the movie of the year, which means the actual quote was probably something like, some people might consider this to be the movie of the year.
Yeah.
But then they pulled just that lie because that's all they have to do with a pull quote. And you know, critics hate that. You know, most critics do not like, some of them, you know, most pull critics are ass. They have to be ass to have a pull quote done. And there are critics out there that will do it. But a lot of critics will say no because they don't want their quote
they want their words to be misconstrued.
So, you know, it's funny. Cool. So The Mandalorian, man.
Yes.
Man, this was a pretty action-packed episode. I'm trying to think back. It's been a couple days now. Well, I had a busy couple days. Refresh my memory, Matt. What happened in this episode again?
Yeah, so in this episode, the pirates return.
That's right.
To Navarro. And they are unfortunately outgunned. And so the townspeople have to evacuate. Greef Karga calls for the rebellion the New Republic to intervene. But they haven't accepted the charter. And that guy who played the ladies' man, who is on SNL.
Is that who that was?
Leon Phelps, the ladies' man. That was him? Yeah, would you like a fifth sandwich? You know, I was waiting for him to say
that. Well, I kept thinking his acting was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, he felt like he was reading off of cue cards.
Yeah. He'd be like, well, yeah, we're not going to thin FITA to go help them. They didn't sign up for ICATA.
We got a cameo from Zeb.
Yeah, we did get Zeb. That was
cool as shit.
And that rebellion fighter, the older Asian guy, he comes back and he's like, you know, able to find the Mandalorian coven, and he's like, hey, your buddy's in danger. You might want to go over there and save his ass. So that he had promised the Mandalorians land, so they know they can go over there, clear it out, get land. So they go over there, they kick some pirate ass, and become heroes.
Basically, you know? Yeah.
And then at the end, the armorer tells Bo-Katan to take her helmet off.
Right.
And she does, and she's like, you go both ways, so you can go help people join our coven. And I'm like, I didn't know she goes both ways. Apparently she goes both ways. And
Katie Sackhoff wants to go both, you know, but anyway.
but then you find out, also, the big thing, Moff Gideon never made it. And that shuttle was sabotaged.
And they make it look like, well, here's my theory on it.
I'll hear yours. I think we may have the same theory.
I think
theory.
That if you look back and pay attention to what's going on, we know Ahsoka is looking for Thrawn. So
yes.
Thrawn is still alive. I have a feeling that Thrawn is one of the rescues Gideon. And he's trying to frame the Mandalorians in the process. Now, will we get Thrawn in Mandalorian Season 3? Maybe not. But I think the seeds are going to start to be sown. I think Ahsoka is going to act like a sequel to Mandalorian, just like Book of Boba Fett kind of act like a sequel to Season 2. I think it's all leading to the introduction of Grand Admiral Thrawn. I think the stuff with the scientists is all, because if you read what Favreau and Filoni said, they have a plan for quite a few years of stories. I think the scientist stuff is all leading to the reintroduction of cloning projects and the possibility of the early beginnings of Snoke and bringing back the Emperor, things like that. Because Favreau in an interview dropped hints that they have enough material that could lead into The Force Awakens. He's dropped hints at that.
Yeah.
So we could be seeing all that. That's my theory. I think that it's all leading to Thrawn. Who else, the episode before that attacked Bo-Katan's castle, who else had an Imperial army that big and that quick?
Yeah. You know? You're right on that. My thing is the Beskar. When I saw the Beskar, I remember that, you know, Katie Sackhoff's, Bo-Katan's teammates had taken off with everything that they had stolen and, you know, gone away. Yeah. And I'm like, what if, in a desperate attempt to get more resources, whatever, they rescue Gideon and, you know, take him and strike some kind of deal with the Imperials?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's possible too. Maybe they're in cahoots.
Maybe.
And she's going to go looking for these new recruits, and she's going to run into issues. Moff Gideon's going to show up,
right,
surrounded by her old Mandalorian teammates. That's what, yeah, I think.
That's possible too. I forgot about them. So, but it was a good episode. It was action packed, and you know, the show continues to, you know, I feel like this season feels a little, I think it just feels a little weaker in the sense that we were given one story we thought was going to be about him returning to his Mandalore roots, but then that happened very quickly, and now we're getting some new stories. It's also pretty fucking hard to top Luke Skywalker kicking ass in the season finale of season 2.
It really is.
So you're never able going to be able to top that. But I'm still enjoying the heck out of the show.
Oh, yeah.
We only have, I mean, it's 8 episodes? So we only have 3 more?
Yeah, just 3 more.
That sucks.
I think it's been solid, but I do think I may like it about on par with season 1. Obviously season 2 is the goat. I mean, just the episode with Michael Biehn and Ahsoka, you know, Boba Fett.
Oh yeah.
You know,
season 2 was awesome.
I mean the
Disney Star Wars stuff so far, I still don't get the hatred towards Obi-Wan, cuz I actually really liked it.
Yeah.
But overall, man, they're doing the Lord's work, giving us more Star Wars. Yeah.
And what more can you ask for, man?
Yeah.
Get more Star Wars.
Katie Sackhoff going both ways, apparently.
Yep, apparently.
let's do a little bit of news before we talk about today's featured film. You know, this has long been rumored for years that Star Trek, we're switching franchises here going to Star Trek.
Yeah.
That Star Trek was going to do a Starfleet Academy television show. This was rumored way back when Voyager was on the air and Deep Space Nine, that they were going to do a show telling a young Captain Kirk and all this stuff. There's no word that it's a young Captain Kirk, but Paramount Plus is finally going to do a Starfleet Academy show.
Nice.
for their streaming network. So I know Star Trek fans are, it seemed to have a pretty good response to the news this week from what I saw on some of the forums and stuff, that Star Trek fans have been waiting a long time for this, to see how Starfleet Academy works and the building of it. So all you Trek nerds, like our co-host Long, y'all are happy. Y'all are getting Star Trek Starfleet Academy. I thought this was cool. Netflix is making a Scott Pilgrim anime, and it's going to have the entire cast is going to come back and do their voices.
Wow.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead coming back for Ramona Flowers, and Michael Cerna for Scott Pilgrim. This is cool shit, man. Scott Pilgrim is one of those movies that, like, every now and then, if you just want to sit down and feel good, you put Scott Pilgrim on. You know, it's just a feel-good movie.
It is a feel-good movie.
You know, it's fun. It's ridiculous. It's maybe I'm a little old and it's a little teenager for me, but I enjoy the fuck out of the movie, you know?
Oh, yeah, man.
And
hopefully we get Thomas Jane back as the vegan police, oh, man. Lord.
But, you know, there were several Scott Pilgrim comic books, and I know the movie touched on, like, just, you know, a few issues. So we'll see where they go with that. I think that's a really cool thing, though.
Yeah.
This is interesting. Ryan Coogler and his company are looking to reboot The X-Files, and it has Chris Carter's blessing. Chris Carter's behind it. He said, yeah, I'm older and retired, and, you know, new generation deserves The X-Files, and they're talking about rebooting it. As a big X-File fan, I feel it's a little too soon, considering they just had the revival a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that it's going to be very difficult to replace David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, because they're pretty iconic as Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
they're definitely an iconic duo from the 90s. It's tough to redo that and catch the chemistry those two had on the small screen and the big screen, the couple movies they did. So as an X-File fan, I look at it like that. But I also, as an X-File fan, I hear Ryan Coogler, and he's fucking brilliant. Yeah. I'm like, okay, maybe Coogler's a guy who could do this and make it and understands the property and does well with it, you know. So
I have faith in him. You know, you've got a, he's a good director, he's proven.
Yeah.
You know, he can definitely lead something like this.
And maybe they go into the route of a reboot. They kind of do what I've read, the Quantum Leap is, it's like a sequel or like a legacy sequel where maybe Mulder and Scully are mentioned in passing, like they started the original X-Files and this is the new X-Files. So something like that could be interesting, where a new alien invasion is happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, legacy, like a cameo. Maybe they're like retiring.
Yeah.
Or maybe they have retired and, you know, there's something like a little anecdote about them.
Because, you know, Gillian Anderson, she's kind of done with it. She doesn't really want to do it anymore. But Duchovny might bring, mm-hmm. make him the FBI leader.
Yeah, director, you know, or something.
Director of the FBI or something. So we'll see what happens with that. I thought this was cool news, too. Liv Tyler's coming back to the MCU to play Betty Ross again.
She went to Atlanta.
Yeah, she was, of course, in The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton and played Betty Ross. And she's going to come back and return in the new Captain America New World Order movie with Anthony Mackie as Captain America. So I think that's pretty cool. And it kind of makes sense since we know Harrison Ford is going to be playing Thunderbolt Ross since mm-hmm. John Hurt passed away. And, you know, and that is her father, Betty Ross's father. So I think that's kind of cool. Always down for me some Liv Tyler, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Well, she's Arwen. Isn't? I mean, you know.
Yeah, she's Arwen. She's, you know, the chick from, what's that Bruce Willis movie? Armageddon.
Oh, Armageddon.
Yeah.
And then lastly, the world is going to get its first look at Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny at the Cannes Film Festival. It's going to open up the festival just like Top Gun Maverick did last year, and it worked worlds of favor for, because the word, when Maverick's first word came out from the Cannes Film Festival and the reviews were through the roof, I mean, look what it did. Word of mouth started, and Maverick was a huge hit. And the studio, Disney and 20th Century Fox, or Paramount, I guess it's all owned by Disney now, Lucasfilm, is banking on the same thing with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny as being a huge opening movie for the Cannes Film Festival, and James Mangold's taking over as director, and you already know I'm excited for this.
So. Oh, big time. Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a nice thing to see after these years.
Hasbro is doing new Indiana Jones toys that are starting to hit. Sitting behind me, I picked up a Sala yesterday. I found in Target, so the new Indiana Jones toys are starting to hit, and I'm sure there'll be toys from the new movies that come out. And so it's going to be an Indiana Jones summer. I mean, honestly, now that John Wick 4 is out, I mean, that's my next big one. I'm looking forward to The Flash, too. Like, I think my next three in order are probably Indiana Jones, The Flash, then I'll probably put Guardians 3, number 3. And I'm only thinking summer. I'm not sure what's coming out later this year. I'm thinking the next couple. Transformers. But but even that, I'm thinking like the next couple months, those are the three that I'm looking forward to. You know, so we'll see. But that's all the news I had for this week. All right, well, let's get into today's feature film, which is a fan pick from a friend of the show, Tracy, when we put on our Facebook group, said, hey, what movies y'all want to see? And we only got a couple of requests. We got more than a couple. We had Robot Jocks, which we did.
Yeah.
Then someone, Winter, who's been on the show before, asked us if we had done Hostel. And we were like, we don't really Hostel. Do torture porn, you know, or, that's what
I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's Eli Roth, right? Yeah.
So, but this was a movie request, and I thought, that would be a good one. It says Major League Baseball is kicking off their season this weekend. Our Astros reigning champions going to try to defend their title this year.
Yeah.
And so we thought it'd be a good movie to kick off the baseball season. And that is 8 Men Out. This movie is from, what year was it? 88. Yeah. Which tells the story in a dramatization of the Black Sox scandal of 1919. And for what people don't know is, this also kind of summarizes the movie. The 1919 White Sox were accused of throwing the World Series. They were the overwhelming favorite odds to win it all. They were an unbelievably good team.
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day, considered one of the best baseball teams to ever be on the field. But a few of the guys got together and decided they would take some money because they felt, to be fair, they felt they were underpaid. They were the top performing team in baseball.
Supposed to get a bonus.
Top attendance, supposed to get a bonus. And their owner, Mr. Kaminsky, Just didn't see it that way. So being disgruntled and disappointed, some of them got together and decided, you know what? Yeah, let's do this. We can make more money throwing the series. And that's what they essentially did, is throw the World Series. Only a few, and there were a few guys that weren't involved. Ed Weaver, he didn't take any money. Mm-hmm. Shoeless Joe Jackson never took any money. And Ed Weaver and Shoeless Joe Jackson, to the day they died, you know, claimed they never took any money. So this movie tells the dramatization of that. And it's a pretty decent baseball movie overall. I think it does a good job of telling the story of what happened to the 1919 mm-hmm. White Sox. There were some small differences, like there were a lot of different characters introduced in this that were involved.
It's based off of the book.
Yeah.
And so the book had some things that were like secondhand information. There were kind of rumors, like they're, you know, people that study this feel like the players went to the gamblers first. Mm-hmm. This movie, based off
the gamblers approached them.
The gamblers approached them and they were like coerced into it.
Right.
You know, these, you know, All-American players. Passion for the game were coerced into making more taking money from this.
Right.
When, you know, there are other evidence that suggests otherwise. But, you know, they, back in the day, it wasn't like it was today where they get all kinds of money. You were kind of like, you got paid kind of, you know, maybe a little bit more than what the average worker made.
Right.
But, you know, you were home every night, you know, everyone knew who you were famous, but, you know, you're kind of like, you know, this, it was an everyday job. Kind of thing. And, you know, the owner apparently was a cheapskate and, you know, promised them stuff. They didn't get it. And they're like, you know, man, you know, we're the best team in baseball. You know, we need to get paid like it.
Right.
And, you know, that's probably what led to this.
Yeah. And then in the original story, one of the mobsters was like, that got involved in this was a top level guy who ended up working for Al Capone into the next decade.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy how much this went up the ladder. And I think this is the most confusing part about the movie is there are several characters introduced at the beginning that are involved in the scandal trying to get the players to take money. And I'm like, wait, who's this guy? Who's this guy? Because they introduced like three or four different guys are involved in the scandal. It was a little off. But
the guy from Roadhouse, you know?
Yeah. But the baseball cast, I mean, you got Charlie Sheen in this movie, John Cusack, Michael Rooker, David Strahan, who's always so good. He plays one of the main pitchers. Christopher Lloyd is in this movie.
D.B. Sweeney,
which plays Shoeless Joe Jackson. And I was reading some critical reviews of this saying that that people don't understand why Shoeless Joe talked the way he did. Shoeless Joe wasn't real educated, and they downplayed in the movie. So instead, it comes across as Shoeless Joe Jackson not mentioning his education. It makes him look kind of just more almost... I almost felt like it was done unfair to him,
yeah.
You know, the way they treated him in this film. And they wanted the movie to purposely not focus on, because most of the baseball stories over the years do focus on how well Shoeless Joe played in the series and he never took any money. And they wanted to give the other players that were involved in the scandal the spotlight in this film, so they mm-hmm. didn't want to feature Shoeless Joe, which in that aspect it does work. But it's an interesting, and I think another thing they changed in the movie, at least I didn't see it, because I think I read... They actually didn't go to trial until almost a year after the World Series, I think, in real life.
Yeah, and this one...
It makes it seem like it's right after the World Series.
Yeah, right after it ends, they're like, all right, sure, yeah, we have all... We wrote down some questionable plays.
Yeah.
And I saw that there's a double play that was botched, obviously botched, and there's still footage of it from 1919. You could tell that it was like, you know, just obviously...
Right.
You know, just set up.
Well, and then Ed, the pitcher played by David Strahan, they said like it was obvious that he was just throwing the ball down the middle. They say he didn't pitch like that all season, and people were like, "Wait, why is he pitching like this?"
Yeah.
It was just very blatantly obvious. But yeah, and in the trial, they were actually in that. I did read that they didn't change. They were initially found not guilty, but then baseball. This changed the way baseball does things. It created the commissioner that we still have to this day in 2023.
Yeah,
it created the commissioner, and baseball in their own foundings found that they were guilty and that they cheated on the game, and they banned them all from baseball. You know, or at least eight of them were banned from baseball.
Yeah,
and to this day, and Ed Weaver fought to the day he died to get reinstated. Shoeless Joe's family to this day still fights for him to be reinstated. But I haven't heard much about Shoeless Joe's family in the last few years as much as I used to. Maybe they finally let it go now. It's been 100 years later.
They were one of the families that tried to sue to keep this movie from being released.
Really?
In fact, almost all 8 families of the players that were accused sued to keep this film under wraps.
Which is strange because I don't feel the movie made them look like bad men.
No.
It just told the story of what happened. It made them look to me like they were men that were...
I think it sympathized with them. It made them look
urgent for what they need to take care of their families. I didn't feel like it planted them in a bad light or anything. So it's interesting the families would do that, considering maybe they hadn't read the scripts. Maybe they just were concerned about that.
Yeah.
And the fact the movie's made almost 80 years after it happened, it's like, you know, stories need to be told, you know?
For real. I mean, I don't think there's a... Well, I guess Field of Dreams talks about Shoeless Joe.
Yeah.
But, you know, really doesn't touch on the scandal like this movie does. And, Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen's good. They wanted Martin Sheen and Lex Luthor. Can't remember his name.
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman. They wanted Gene Hackman in this film. But
I did read that.
The script was in, like, limbo for, like, 11 years. And, you know, some of these actors got too old. So the ball was rolling, and certain people, got left out of the casting. But Charlie Sheen, man, he's good in this film.
Mm-hmm. I like low-key Charlie Sheen like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rooker, he's the same guy from every other film.
I know. I was busting Long's balls and text messages today. And that's what made me think about this. Like, Michael Rooker seems like the coolest dude on the planet. You want to hang out and have a beer with him. But he's just not good on screen. He's literally the same character
in every fucking movie. In a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's literally the same character in every movie. And I'm like, oh, James Gunn's going to cast... Watch James Gunn cast him as Lex Luthor or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like... But anyway. But yeah, no, this is a well-cast movie. It's why it's a well-costumed period piece.
Mm-hmm.
I learned something about baseball I didn't even know when watching this movie. Players throw their gloves down. That back then, they used to leave their gloves on the field.
Yeah.
Instead of taking them to the dugout. Every team did it. But then they started realizing that players were tripping over gloves, and all of a sudden they decided to start picking them up. I never knew that.
Yeah.
In the early days of baseball. I also did not know that the World Series was best of 9.
Oh, really?
Back then.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was best of 9, then they changed it to best of 7 a few years down the road.
Interesting.
I didn't even know that either. So that's why... It says game 8 on screen or something, and I didn't really realize that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
You know, that was best of 9 back then. And you can tell they did a good job. Like, the fields back then were much bigger, and it shows on screen. They had higher walls back then.
Well, I know they filmed this movie in Cincinnati instead of Chicago, because Cincinnati actually was more... You had more older buildings in Cincinnati and Chicago. By the time they went to go film this movie, they had industrialized a little bit of their downtown area.
Yeah.
So it really didn't look like Chicago from that period. So they actually filmed in Cincinnati.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't notice, you know. I mean.
Yeah, every movie, you know, is never filmed, you know.
I mean, hell, Christopher Nolan did it. And Batman Begins is shot in Chicago. And you have all these L trains, and all of a sudden they disappear because he decided to shoot in Pittsburgh for The Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises.
Uh-huh.
It's like, wait a minute, Shane, does it look like Gotham from Batman Begins? You know, but that's okay. But overall, man, I think it's been... I had seen this movie years ago, a long time ago. So it's been a long time since I watched it, and I did enjoy rewatching it. I think the movie started off a little bit wonky the first 15, 20 minutes. But once the story starts flowing and they get into the scandal and then players taking money and the World Series starts happening, the movie gets a lot better.
Yeah, it moves very, very quickly after that first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you don't even realize that, you know, you're at the end of the movie whenever it happens. It flows pretty well. It's very entertaining. You learn a lot from it.
Mm.
And you definitely, you know, empathize with the players. You know,
I did wonder, for being an 88 film, how it didn't get a PG-13. I thought that was it, because there's an F word in it.
Oh,
there's three or four shits in it and a couple of dams. I'm like... But I was thinking that, Mike, and I even did a double take. I'm like, no, it's rated PG. But, you know, I guess they weren't sure what to do with PG-13. Was still only a couple years old.
Yeah.
Maybe 84 when Temple of Doom came out. So maybe they weren't sure, yet still how to use PG-13?
Maybe so.
You know, but it's no different than, have you ever seen that movie with Nick Nolte, the basketball movie, Blue Chips?
Okay.
Where Nolte's cussing left and right in the movie, God damn you, Sandra Bridges, blah, blah. It's, the movie's like PG-13.
PG-13.
Like, how is this PG-13?
He's like, it drops like 5 F-bombs.
You know? So sometimes it's funny to watch those movies in the late 80s and 90s. Like, they got away with things that were should have been PG-13 or PG, or should have been R that were PG-13.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, and not that this one's bad, but it did have a few bad words. And I was like a little shocked, you know. But that's okay. But overall, I think I enjoyed watching 8 Men Out. I think it was a good pick from our the Rebel Radio Podcast fan base.
Yes.
It might be a small fan base, but we have a fan base.
Yes. It's still a base.
That's right. It's more than some people don't even get to second base. So, you know.
That's true.
It's still a base. Yeah. How about that baseball reference?
Baseball.
You know. But yeah, man, 8 Men Out. It's available. I watched it on Tubi. It's available on Tubi and Pluto for free right now. I mean, it was an easy watch. You know, one thing I do like about Tubi is their commercials aren't too bad. You know, they load quickly. They're usually like a minute long.
Smooth streaming.
I mean, for considering Tubi's a free app, its commercials load quicker than most of some of the pay apps.
And yes.
Like, man, it does run smoothly. So it's all good. So if you haven't seen 8 Men Out, while a good baseball movie to enjoy and a good one to kick off the Major League Baseball season as it kicked off this weekend. And you know, I'm not one to make any bold predictions, but I just hope that the Astros have another good playoff run this year. And, you know, if we win another one, we win another one.
Yeah, yeah.
If we don't,
they definitely can do it.
If we don't, I'm honestly pretty satisfied winning two already. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll take another one if we get it. So, you know. All right. Well, so next month, man. Well, it is April. So this month. This movie kicked off April, but it's officially our theme month. Every year in April, we usually do a theme. We did the sequels that made us 1 year. We did Crime Pays. We did comedies last year, even though we didn't have an official name because I was being a disgruntled employee of the Rebel Radio Podcast and didn't really want to do comedies. Thank you, Long.
Yeah.
But I suffered through the watching of those movies. Yes, and there was some suffering involved, trust me, especially watching a guy fall into water in Robin Hood Men in Tights and go, oh, I can't get out. I'm supposed to laugh at this? Sorry, but that was stupid.
Yeah.
So this year, well, I never did come up with a fancy title for this, but we're basically going to do comic book movies that didn't quite work. As right now, superhero films are still very popular, despite some of the recent ones not making as much money as some of the early things, but I still think the popularity is there because the Batman did real well last year. People are super excited for The Flash, so I think the market's still definitely there. And we're going to kick it off with a movie that came out before Marvel Studios owned all these rights, and it's very much a 2000s comic movie. It came out in 2003, and it stars Ben Affleck, and that is Daredevil.
Rooftops and alleyways at night, searching for justice, blind justice, a guardian devil. I was 12 years old. I had lost my sight, but I got something back in return. My remaining four senses functioned with superhuman sharpness. I could hear a whisper a block away, but the most amazing of all was a kind of radar sense. Soon the world will know the truth.
There is no proof that Daredevil even exists.
That one man can make a difference.
What do you want?
Justice.
Matt Murdock.
Nice to meet you.
I didn't get your name.
I didn't give it.
Sure you don't want to tell me your name?
My name's Electrum. I have to go. My bodyguard is here.
Your bodyguard?
In a city ruled by fear.
Kingpin just doesn't kill you. He killed your whole family.
One man will face his greatest challenge in Bullseye.
The devil is mine.
Was that really necessary?
Necessary? No.
It was fun.
And a new hero will be born.
Time to give the devil his due.
How do you kill him?
Putting the fear in him.
New York is not a safe place tonight.
I have to go.
I got work to do.
anything else.
Yeah. I want a costume.
I don't hate this film. You know, it's got its moments.
Yeah.
The director's cut's definitely better. The biggest problem with this movie, we'll talk about this next week, is it tries to do way too much in 2 hours. Like, yes. It takes about 100 issues of comics and tries to cram it into 2 hours. Yeah, that's the biggest problem.
Stuff the shit out of this.
Yes, that's
movie.
The biggest problem with the film. It's not, I mean, people can say it's Affleck, it's Jennifer Garner, it's Colin Farrell. No, it's none of that. It's the fact that they really try to do a lot in a 2 hour film. And we'll look at that. We're going to watch the director's cut version, which is definitely better than the theatrical version. And we will talk next week about Daredevil. And it's funny, you know, Kevin Feige has a producer's credit on this film because he was working for 20th Century Fox at the time.
Wow.
Because this was a 20th Century Fox Marvel movie before Marvel Studios wasn't even a thing in 2003 yet. You know, so this was when they were still licensing their characters out and such. And it'll be cool, man. I'm going to go back and revisit it. It does have the great Michael Clark Duncan in it, who I always miss when I see him on screen, man. He was such a presence and not just a big man. He actually, the guy could act.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Clark Duncan can act his ass off. And so it'd be good to watch him. And Colin Farrell, this was his first American movie that he got to use his own accent, which is kind of cool.
I know that. As Poindexter.
Bullseye.
Yeah, Bullseye, Poindexter. Right? Isn't that his real name?
I don't know.
Ben Poindexter? Or...
Maybe, yeah, it might be.
Yeah.
I always call him Bullseye. Yeah, he's so, Bullseye. So next week on the show, we'll kick off Comic Movies That Don't Quite Work with Daredevil. And it's available on HBO Max, the regular version, but it's rough, man. It's like it's a blown-up version. I don't know, so... Luckily, I found the director's cut on your Vudu account, Matt.
So I didn't realize I bought that.
So that's next week on the show, Daredevil. But until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we thank you, as always, for listening. Matt, it was fun, man, doing it in person.
Yeah.
But I guess we're going to have to do this more often.
Every other week, probably,
or something.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was good to hang with you and do a show. And we thank you, as always, for listening. I think I already said that, so I'm repeating myself. So it's probably time to call it a day.
Yeah.
This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Thank you, as always, for listening. Just remember, go there and do it.